We're talking today about the music of composer Ennio Morricone, who will be recognized for lifetime achievement at the Academy Awards later this month. Let's hear more about Morricone's music from Christopher Frayling, the author of Once Upon a Time in Italy, The Westerns of Sergio Leone. Frayling spoke with Terry Gross in 2005.
The music from The Westerns is so, it's just so good. How did Morricone and Leone had vaguely known each other in elementary school. How did they hook up as adults?
Yes, they'd known each other in the 1930s. In fact, there's a famous school photo where they're standing almost next to each other, taken in the mid-30s. But when Leone was making A Fistful of Dollars, he had to choose a composer, and he rejected the composer that the producers had suggested and went to meet Morricone. He'd forgotten they were at school together. But they talked, and they concocted a kind of anti-Western score, you know, that whereas the traditional Hollywood Western had a very symphonic, rich score, school of Aaron Copland or Jerome Moros, you know, folk tunes reworked as symphonies, they wanted something that was much more hip, much more related to pop. So you get a Fender Stratocaster guitar, as used by the Beach Boys or the Shadows. You get whistling, which is associated with kind of solitude in the desert. You get a lot of Italian folk instruments, the maranzano or jew's harp, you know, doing, 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 and a thing called the argillophone, which is a ceramic instrument with holes in it, where you go, doo, that sort of thing. So it's Italian folk instruments plus rock music of the mid-1960s, and it was an astonishingly raucous, noisy sound, which became a huge bestseller as a soundtrack album, Fistful of Dollars. And it's nearer Tarantino than Aaron Copland, you know. It's kind of, it's like a pop music sampler. In fact, when I went to see Kill Bill, Part 1, Tarantino's movie, I thought he'd stolen my record collection. The soundtrack was absolutely those kind of things. But it's raucous, it's youthful, and it's not hooked into the classical tradition at all. And it works, but it's also a lot of sense of humour. It punctuates the action in a very amusing way sometimes.
And on the soundtracks of the movies, in the actual movies, gunshots are used as if they're part of the score.
Yes. In fact, concrete sounds, you know, it was very trendy in the mid-1960s to experiment with music in the spirit of John Cage, the composer. And John Cage famously wrote a piece of music that consisted of silence. And the idea was the pianist would come in, sit down at his piano, and there'd be silence, and the sounds of the concert hall would become the concert. So the coughing and the rustling and the sweets being eaten in the bag and the shuffling of feet and the rustling of the program become the music. So all sound is music. This was a very fashionable idea in the mid-60s. And they picked up on this for the Italian Westerns. Morricone was very interested in fact, he'd been to a seminar with John Cage in the late 50s. So gunshots and whip cracks and bells and choirs singing incomprehensible lyrics. Mm-hmm. I asked the choir master about the soundtrack of Fistful of Dollars. I said, what are you actually singing? You know, what is it? Is it Quick Get Back or We Must Fight? Or he said, I can't remember. It was just incomprehensible. They're just sounds, you know, and the human voice is used as another musical instrument rather than as a vocal line. So you get a lot of humming in these films. And it's interesting. It's sort of avant-garde music meets pop, and they're classic soundtracks, and they're a very important element in these films.
Well, why don't we hear the opening credit music from the soundtrack of the first Leone-Morricone collaboration, A Fistful of Dollars, and we'll hear those gunshots being used as part of the score in this.
The music of Ennio Morricone. We're paying tribute to composer Ennio Morricone, who'll be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the upcoming Academy Awards. He composed the scores for many of the classic spaghetti westerns. Let's listen to a scene from Sergio Leone's first spaghetti western, A Fistful of Dollars. Clint Eastwood is a gunslinger who's just arrived in a dusty Mexican town, where he runs into a bunch of bad guys who start razzing him. They have no idea who they're dealing with.
Adios, amigo. Listen, stranger. Then you get the idea. We don't like to see bad boys like you in town. Go get your mule. You let him get away from you?
You see, that's what I want to talk to you about. He's feeling real bad.
Huh?
My mule. You see, he got all riled up when you went and fired those shots at his feet.
Hey, you making some kind of joke?
No. You see, I understand you men were just playing around, but the mule, he just doesn't get it. Of course, if you were to all apologize... I don't think it's nice you laughing. You see, my mule don't like people laughing. It's the crazy idea you're laughing at him. Now, if you apologize, like I know you're going to, I might convince him that you really didn't mean it.
Why did Sergio Leone love Westerns? Why did he want to make them in Italy?
Well, you've got to imagine a child growing up in 1930s Rome at a time when Mussolini was the dictator and when most American movies were banned and those that were seen were dubbed into Italian. And the young Leone first saw his Hollywood Western movies in the 1930s at that time, and his heroes were Gary Cooper and Clark Gable and films like Stagecoach. And to him, they represented an absolute model of freedom. He lived in suburban Rome in cramped conditions, and he saw these wide open spaces, this unimaginable desert that goes on forever. He saw these characters. He couldn't understand what they were saying. He couldn't. He never heard the. In fact, he never learned to speak English, Sergio Leone. That's what's so extraordinary. But they were dubbed into a different language, not very well. But nevertheless, they clicked in his mind. Then, in the 1950s, when he went into the film industry, he found that nobody was really very interested in the Western. A lot of Hollywood veteran directors went over to Italy to make epics, films like Ben-Hur and Helen of Troy and Quo Vadis. And Leone hung around these films. Sometimes he was the assistant director. And he talked to directors like Fred Zinnemann, who'd made High Noon, Robert Aldrich, who'd made The Last Sunset and Apache and films like that. And they all said to him, the Western's dead. It's finished. We don't make Westerns anymore. So basically, Leone made Westerns because Hollywood had stopped making them and because in Europe, and particularly in Italy, there was this huge interest in the Western and a huge knowledge of it as well. So the whole thing starts in a kind of folk memory of American Westerns that went back to the 1930s, and it's partly political. But the other thing was that Leone felt that Westerns had got a bit talky. There was too much talking in them. He liked Westerns where Rin Tin Tin did all the thinking, you know. Old-fashioned Westerns where lots and lots of action and not too much talk. He didn't like psychology, you know, Freudian Westerns got on his nerves. Films like The Left-Handed Gun with Paul Newman where, you know, you feel if there'd been a social worker around, Billy the Kid would never have happened. Films like that, he didn't like. He liked films where, you know, a lot of shooting, a lot of riding, a lot of action, a lot of landscape. So he wanted to bring back the kind of innocence of the Western.
A lot of the Italian Westerns were had international casts. So,
yeah.
So, and you can almost see that in the faces. I mean, there's something very, like an ethnic variety of faces.
That's true. And very often it went with co-production. You know, the Festival of Dollars is a co-production between West Germany, Spain and Italy. So you have Italian actors, Spanish actors, West German actors. There were a whole series of West German Westerns made at the same time in the mid-1960s, where the Native Americans are all played by Yugoslavians, if you're following me.
Yeah.
So you can tell the Native Americans because they're Yugoslavian.
In America, they're all played by Jews, probably.
And, you know, you're quite right. There's this sort of ethnic mix. But I think, and in fact, Once Upon a Time in the West, Claudio Cardinale, Italian, Charles Bronson, American, Henry Fonda, American, Gabriele Fazzetti, the man who plays the railroad baron, Italian, Frank Wolf, an American actor who'd moved over after the blacklist of the early 50s to Rome and was making his living in the Italian film industry. It's quite a mix of actors. But I think it points to another thing, and that is that when these films came out, they were treated as ersatz American movies, you know, carbon copy westerns which were trying to ape Hollywood. I don't believe that. These are Italian movies. I think they're really best understood as part of Italian culture and European culture. They were originally made, well, Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More were originally made for the home audience. In the 1960s, southern Italian audiences went to the cinema more often than any other audiences in the world outside America. Southern Italian audiences went to the cinema twice a week on average as adults. There was no television in southern Italy in the mid-60s. So all the cultural references are for that audience. There's lots of references to Italian paintings, to Roman Catholicism. There are bells and churches and monks and cemeteries and crosses and angels and the interiors of churches and the whole iconography of Roman Catholicism. I think one difference between the Italian Western and the American Western is that in the end, the American Western is a Protestant genre based upon a Protestant view of the world in the 19th century, whereas the Italian Western is a Catholic genre, you know, at that fundamental level. Not in an upfront way, but that's just the visual references.
Where are the desert scenes shot in Leone's movies?
The desert scenes were filmed in southern Spain, in Almería, which is actually a slightly different colour to the real American West. It's very yellow and olivey in colour. But if anyone goes to southern Spain on their holidays, some of the sets are still there, remarkably. They were built so well that the whole of the town of El Paso, which is built for a few dollars more, is there in the middle of the Spanish desert. And it's extraordinary. You're driving along and you come across this town. So, yeah, it transformed the economy of southern Spain.
Well, you know, because the casts were international, you know, we hear Eastwood's real voice in America when we hear the American version, but a lot of the actors are dubbed in the early Leone films, and you can tell they're dubbed. They sound like the old Hercules movies where everybody's dubbed. so that undercuts things a little bit, you know, because the dubbing is just so bad.
Well, it's interesting, you know, every Italian movie of the 60s was dubbed. It partly arises from building their major studio on the flight path of Fiumicino Airport. So planes go over all the time. They just didn't have the convention of natural sound in Italy. Everything was post-synchronized. Fellini, Visconti, Antonioni, all these films. And so the dubbing is not unusual. I think in the early Leones, because they didn't have much of a budget, the dubbing isn't very good. But I think the sound design of these films does have a quality of its own. The gunshots sound like cannons, and the cannons sound like nuclear explosions. Everything's pumped up on the soundtrack, and Leone once said to me that sound is 40%, at least, of the experience of a film. And that was quite new in the 60s, too. So there are pluses to the dubbing as well as minuses.
Christopher Frayling, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much.
Christopher Frayling speaking with Terry Gross. He's the author of Once Upon a Time in Italy, The Westerns of Sergio Leone.